Welcome to episode 194 of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. If you want to burn fat, gain energy, and enhance your health by changing when you eat, not what you eat, with no calorie counting, then this show is for you. I'm Melanie Avalon, author of What, When, Why? Lose Weight and Feel Great with Paleo-Style Meals, Intermittent Fasting, and Wine. And I'm here with my co-host, Jen Stevens, author of Delay, Don't Deny, Living an Intermittent Fasting Lifestyle. For more on us, check out ifpodcast.com, melanieavalon.com, and jenstevens.com. Please remember, the thoughts and opinions on this podcast do not constitute medical advice or treatment. So, pour yourself a cup of black coffee, a mug of tea, or even a glass of wine, if it's that time, and get ready for the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. Hi friends, I'm about to tell you how to get 10% off the perfect coffee for fasting. You guys know I am extremely picky about what I consume during my fast, and we talk all the time on this show about the benefits of coffee while fasting. However, there are a lot of factors in coffee which not only determine how much it benefits your health and your fast, but also which can potentially harm your health and your fast. What you want is organic, clean, mold-free, high antioxidant coffee. That's exactly why I created Glow Coffee. It is an organic, clean, premium, single-origin Arabica coffee from sustainable women-led farms in Colombia. And this coffee is so clean. It's grown organically, of course, but then we go even farther than that. We third-party test the beans for almost 100 toxic compounds, including pesticides, heavy metals, and mold. And what makes Glow especially exciting from a fasting perspective is that we sourced it specifically to be high in chlorogenic acid, or CGA. That is coffee's primary powerful antioxidant that has been studied for its role in metabolism and blood sugar regulation, among many other things. The elevation and growing conditions of the coffee bean affect the levels of CGA in the coffee, and how you roast it also affects that. So we meticulously addressed all of these factors to create one of the highest antioxidant coffees possible. So instead of just drinking coffee during your fast, you are actually getting something that may support the metabolic benefits of fasting. And on top of all of that, Glow is absolutely delicious. It's smooth, balanced, low bitterness, and especially perfect to drink black during your fast. Glow Coffee is truly the coffee I have always wanted for my fasting routine, and I'm so excited to share it with you guys. You can get 10% off with the coupon code IFPODCAST at glowcoffeeco.com. That's right, go to glowcoffeeco.com and use the coupon code IFPODCAST to get 10% off your order. So are you guys ready to glow inside and out? Fuel your day, illuminate your way. Go get Glow Coffee now. Hey friends, are you ready for your life to be changed, starting with your feet? I am so excited to tell you about Paluva. Paluva is a 5-toe, zero-drop minimalist shoe that gives you the most authentic barefoot style experience ever, but also with sufficient cushioning to use for all types of everyday movement, fitness, and athletic activities. Basically, if you've been wanting to enter the barefoot movement world, you need Paluva. Paluvas are also incredibly stylish, so you get a barefoot shoe that looks great. They come in all different styles and colors, so you can definitely find something that fits your style. And yes, it is nice to see the popularity of minimalist shoes today, but Paluvas are a step ahead, no pun intended, of every other zero-drop wide box shoe because of the critical feature of individual 5-toe articulation, which means a separate slot for each of your toes. This allows for correct dynamic movement of the foot through the walking or running stride, which is impossible, yes, impossible, when toes are encased in a single box, even a wide box. And friends, I am so sold on the science of Paluva and what it can do for your health that it actually got me wearing closed-toed shoes. That's right. Before Paluva, I was only wearing sandals and high heels. And of course, minimalist shoes have faced controversy in recent years about causing injuries from inappropriate use. So the big picture mission statement here is this. We want to get you walking in Paluvas, living in Paluvas, and going barefoot in your home or safe areas as often as possible. So yes, go ahead and use your specialized running shoes, your basketball shoes, your work boots, or, oh hey, your high heels when you need to, but then wear Paluva as much as possible to reawaken the natural functionality of the human foot to stand, walk, run, and perform. That's right, these shoes are healing for your feet, friends, and not just your feet, but your entire body. I am so obsessed with the science and effects of Paluvas that I want you to try them with no risk. That's right, no risk. You will quickly realize that these are the most comfortable shoes you've ever worn. They are literally designed to feel like you're walking barefoot on a putting green. And Paluva has an epic offer for our audience. Go to paluva.com/ifpodcast and use the code ifpodcast to get a 10% discount. That's right, paluva.com/ifpodcast with the coupon code ifpodcast for a 10% discount. Did I mention it's risk-free? If you don't like them, which I promise you're going to love them, but if you don't, you get your money back. And Paluva also makes epic gifts for other people. So just figure out your friends and family's shoe size and get them some Paluvas as well. That's paluva.com/ifpodcast with the coupon code ifpodcast for 10% off. Paluvas let your feet be feet. Hi, everybody, and welcome. This is episode number 194 of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. I'm Melanie Avalon, and I'm here with Jen Stevens.
Hi, everybody.
How are you today, Jen?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good. Last night, had my much-belated birthday dinner with my family.
How was that?
It was good. It was very much like a Melanie dinner.
What does that mean, a Melanie dinner?
So I had, for the appetizer, kangaroo.
Oh my gosh, I don't even know where you get that. And that, I do eat meat, so I don't know why a kangaroo would make me sad.
I know.
Why was I like, oh.
It's a normal thing to eat in Australia.
I guess it is. And it's silly to feel that way about like one meat over another meat if you're eating meat. And I also think kangaroos might be kind of mean.
I think they are, and I think there's also like a kangaroo population issue in Australia.
Oh. I just know when we used to watch like America's Funniest Home Videos as a family. Did you ever watch that?
Yes.
Whenever there was a kangaroo, I'm like, oh, he's going to kick somebody.
I know.
And if they were standing by the river, I'm like, oh, they're going to kick him in the river.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. For people who are interested, it's a lean red meat.
Does it remind you of beef when you eat it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just a little bit gamier. So that was the appetizer. For the entree, I had rabbit. And then for the dessert, I didn't even ask them for this, but they brought me out a happy birthday plate and a fruit bowl with just berries. I was like, this is the only thing I would eat for dessert. And the waiter was like, I think after 2 hours, I realized that.
So like you didn't have any sides. You just had the kangaroo meat itself and the rabbit meat itself.
And steamed spinach.
Okay.
And then for the wine, I brought dry farm wines, but I don't like bringing my own wine because I know servers get really annoyed having been a fine dining server myself for 5 years. So if listeners are curious for restaurants, how I deal with wine at restaurants, I bring dry farm wines, but then I pick a restaurant that has a really good wine list and I vet the menu when I get there. And if there is an organic wine from Europe, I will drink that. So I had an organic wine from Europe by the glass. And then my dad always does this, halfway through, he just orders a bottle. Like out of all of the bottles, he picked an organic wine without even realizing it. So it was wonderful. I had that.
Now, see, I actually have taken special wine to restaurants before that have like a corkage fee.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mind if I want to have a certain wine.
If I do it, I will like basically add in my head like another $100 to the bill and tip on that.
Yeah, you tip based on if they had ordered the wine. That makes sense. Yeah. I worked as a server too. That's actually where Chad and I met. Did I ever tell you that? We were waiting tables.
You waited tables together?
Yeah, at the same restaurant. That's where we met. Back in 1990, it was the summer of 1990. He was 19, I was 20. And we were both waiting tables at a restaurant down by the river. We were babies. But yes, whenever you have like a special deal, any kind of special deal, you want to tip on the amount that it would have been if you didn't have the special deal.
We could make this like an entire like server podcast.
I'm a generous tipper. Although I will say one of my pet peeves, it was whenever tips are automatically included. That bothers me because I would have always would have tipped better, but it makes me annoyed.
If they do that, then I just add to it.
I don't. If someone puts a gratuity on there automatically, I'm like, well, sad for you because that's all you're getting. I would have tipped you more. I don't know. That's just one of my pet peeves because I never add it, even though you could sometimes at certain party types, I never added. Sometimes I was regretful that I hadn't, but oftentimes it was worth it. Like usually it was.
Actually, one of my favorite things now about, and I'm so grateful for this, but being like financially stable from all of the, like the podcasts and the books and all of that, is that I'm like, I can afford to tip. And it's like my favorite thing to do.
Oh, me too.
It brings me so much joy.
I'm the same way. I love to tip well. But again, like I said, someone automatically adding a gratuity is one of my pet peeves. I don't know why. Just, I'm like, I would have been more generous, but oh well, you chose that. Okay.
Yeah. I guess because it's like forced upon you.
Yeah. I like to be generous because I want to be.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That is a very Melanie meal.
I know. That's the type of restaurants I look for.
I don't even know where you go to eat that food.
Yeah, it's called Canoe in Atlanta. Highly recommend it.
Well, I've heard of that. I've heard of it.
Oh, you have? Oh, right, because we're both from, well,
I lived in the Atlanta area. Yeah. What part of Atlanta is it in?
I should know this.
Is it like Buckhead?
No. It's like this little area that's like an area that's not Buckhead. I don't know. There's another restaurant right by it that I've been to called Old Vinings Inn.
So it sounds like Vinings.
Oh, that's probably it. Yeah.
I would predict you were in Vinings.
I think so. I believe that is correct. So
that's great.
Good times.
Well, I'm glad you had a good dinner.
I did. Of course, when the dinner first started, the waiter came over and he was like, I hear we're celebrating your birthday. And then my mom was like, yes, her. And then she like explained, like proclaimed my age to the entire restaurant. I was like, thanks, mom. Thank you.
Embrace it. Embrace the age.
Yes. Well, perhaps.
I'm telling you, it's going to keep getting higher. And then you...
or unless we invent like time travel or I don't know. I'm interviewing Mr. like some crazy longevity person. I think maybe he has some secrets.
All right. Is he's crazy or his ideas are crazy or he likes crazy longevity? I'm trying to determine which part is crazy.
Crazy and like he's not crazy, but he invests in like longevity technology. So I think our conversation is going to be about like avatars and that type of stuff.
So really kind of out there, but like futuristic kind of stuff.
Like the technological future of longevity, like what that actually looks like. So I'm pretty excited.
Well, we do have robot vacuums now. So, you know, we're pretty much in the future.
I dreamed about my robot vacuum last night. So that's really funny that you said that.
That's funny. I don't have one. Well, see, my house is weird. I have like a sunken living room right in the middle. It's like a two-story sunken living room. And you come in the foyer and you step down to it and then you step up to the dining room or step up to the kitchen. And it might sound weird, but it's beautiful. My house was built in 79. But I'm like, I don't know where I would put a robotic vacuum because it can't go up these little stairs.
Oh, yeah. We talked about that.
Yeah. So.
Well, you could get the one that makes a map of your house and then you could map it so that it doesn't fall. And then you could get like two, like one on the lower, one on the upper.
Well, I would need one for the master bedroom in the foyer, one for, I mean, I've got all, it's crazy the way the rooms go around. Yeah. I would need, let me see, one, two, three, four, I would need five. Five robotic vacuums.
Okay, maybe not.
You know what's funny? Chad loves to vacuum. I got one of those Dyson that it's the cordless that plugs in, one of those little ones. I had all these credits for Best Buy because we bought a washer and dryer. And if you put it on their credit card, you got all these credits. And I'm like, all right, I'll do that. And so I was able to get this Dyson really expensive vacuum for very cheap. And so Chad will go grab it. He had never once in the lifetime of knowing him gotten out our big vacuum and vacuumed the house. But like every day or something, he'll go grab that little cordless vacuum and go around the house and vacuum stuff.
Still?
Yeah. he did it this morning. I was actually trying to watch TV and he's vacuuming. I'm like, look, I'm not even going to complain.
That's so funny.
I'm just going to sit here and pause the TV and not worry about it. The man's vacuuming. So I've got a robot vacuum. It's called Chad.
That's great. I actually did just buy, you know what else Dyson makes? They make vacuums, and then they expanded their products and made something very specific.
Well, I know they have a hair dryer. What is it? Is that it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like a hair dryer. And apparently they put a lot of like research into the science of hair dryers to make this crazy hair dryer. I got it. It's incredible.
Okay. Now, see, I'm a little mad now because I had the option to choose that for something that I might want, and I did not choose that.
Oh, it's really wonderful.
So I'm like, because I was like, I got a good hair dryer. I don't need it.
I got the straightener too, and the straightener is okay, but the hair dryer, I'm like, everybody needs this hair dryer.
How is it special?
I don't know. So it looks really strange.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like a donut kind of.
It has like this, I don't even know how it works. It has like this like circle. It looks very futuristic, and the air comes through. I literally have no idea where the air is coming from, but it blows out of this hollow circle thing. And then, yeah, it's light, easy to hold, and it just dries my hair really fast. And apparently the science that they did is they make sure it never changes, like the temperature is like very tightly controlled of the air, so it doesn't ever like overheat your hair. I don't know. It's really amazing.
Well, now I'm super sad that I didn't choose it.
Next time. So, shall we jump into everything?
Yes, let's get started.
All right. So to start things off, we have a question from Danielle, and the subject is sleep and IF, because this is the Intermittent Fasting Podcast, if people didn't figure that out yet. Danielle says, hi, Jen and Melanie. I have a question about ADF, which is alternate day fasting, and sleep. I don't struggle with the hunger on ADF, but it has a massive impact on my sleep. Even after doing it for a few months, I never adjust and have very poor sleep on these nights. Usually my sleep is really good. My background. I'm currently 121 pounds with muscle as I lift weights 2 times a week and would prefer to be around 112 to 114 pounds. I am 5'4", so this is around the lower end of a healthy BMI range. I usually have a 3 to 4 hour eating window each day and often longer on the weekends, 8 hours. I eat everything, but mostly fish plus salad or vegetables, or chicken plus salad, or other meat plus salad or pasta during the week. And on weekends, I may go out for brunch and dinner. So I have a varied diet, but mostly whole foods with minimal junk foods. Although I never, ever deny myself anything, I always eat to satiety. I've never been overweight, and I have always weighed around 116 to 120 pounds since age 14. I'm currently 34 years old. I actually have technically time-restricted my eating unconsciously since being a teenager, as I never ate breakfast anyway. With this way of eating, I easily stay at 121 pounds without any effort. Actually, I am usually slightly lighter, but I gained 2 pounds since lifting weights at the start of this year, but my inches are smaller. I can't seem to lose and stay at a lower than my current weight. This is where my body likes to be. I tried ADF again recently for 2 months and lost inches, but not much weight, maybe 4 pounds, but couldn't maintain the eating style because of the impact on sleep. I gained back the little loss that I had after stopping again. Anything you suggest would be very helpful. I'm even happier being only 5 pounds less, but can't even seem to do that easily. Thank you, and I love your show. I've listened every week since your first episode. You both carefully evaluate research and are critical of fads, which I really like. It's so lovely having an all-women show that is thoughtful and scientific, and you're both careful not to overstep your expertise in the area of health, which is refreshing. I also really enjoy that you each have different opinions with some things and don't need to agree with everything the other says. I think this demonstrates your modesty about your wealth of knowledge on the topic and willingness to adapt beliefs based on science. Danielle.
All right. All right. Well, there's two things here, two directions that I'm going to go. First of all, I'm going to address the actual first part of the question, but then I'm going to talk about Danielle's struggle overall. But first of all, let's talk about sleep with ADF. Danielle, I was the same way. I did not sleep on down days when I was doing ADF, and particularly I was doing the full fast version of ADF. So I would have a 36 to 42 hour fast, and then the next day would be an up day. So I'd have at least 2 meals on the up days. That's how I recommend that you do it based on the research on ADF. I'm talking about the up day. But there's two ways you can structure your down day. One is the complete fast, like I said, 36 to 42 hours. The alternate way you can structure your down day is with a 500 calorie down day meal. So for somebody struggling with sleep, I would recommend that you try that version, the 500 calorie down day meal, and choose something that, you know, a lot of people have trouble, you know, stopping at 500 calories. But if you choose something strategically, something that is very satisfying, it will fill you up, and you have it later in the day, closer to bedtime, you may find that you're able to sleep with the down day meal. That's just an option. It helps some people. Really, that is why I feel like I won't do ADF. I was not a good sleeper on ADF, no matter, it wasn't a good sleep combination for me. So I get it. And, you know, if I needed to do ADF, you know, for any certain reasons, if I felt like I needed it metabolically, you know, something like that, if I was stuck on a plateau and trying to lose more weight, I might would, you know, do it for a little while, but the sleep was an issue for me. A lot of people don't have that problem. They sleep great with ADF, whether they're doing the longer fasts or the down day version. But sleep is important and we're all different. So I completely get the struggle, and that was one I faced as well. Now, let's talk about your weight. You're 5'4". Now, I know we're all different and there's no formula that's perfect. And I know that, you know, your frame size can be important. You might have like a really tiny, dainty frame. So, you know, I'm bearing that in mind. But I once heard a formula that I kind of like as a rule of thumb. And it was 100 pounds for your first 5 feet and then 5 pounds per inch after that. So if we calculate, you know, that's to find your ideal weight. And I'm putting that in quotation marks, air quotes, ideal weight. Because as I said, there are a lot of factors at play. But for 5'4", using that formula, your quote, ideal weight would be 120 pounds. And you're right there at 121. And the difference between 120 and 121 is like, you know, a good poop. I mean, that's within your maintenance range. So I would consider 121 to be, you know, statistically the same as 120. You also said something that was very important, several things. First of all, you said, I can't seem to lose and stay at a lower weight than my current weight. One thing I have found over my years of maintenance, my years of maintaining within the range where I am now, this is where my body likes to be. And that really is why I threw my scale away, because when I started thinking about my ideal weight using that formula that I just told you, that would put my ideal weight, I'm 5'5", I should be 125 pounds at my ideal weight. So I got it in my head that I needed to see that number. And so I didn't weigh for a year, and then I got on the scale and I felt like I was at my ideal weight because I was, you know, wearing a size 0 jeans from the loft, and I knew I didn't need to lose more weight or really want to lose more weight. So I had it in my brain that I would see 125 on the scale. I got on the scale that day in 2017 and saw, you know, 130.2 or some nonsense like that. And I was so mad, because I wanted to see a different number. But then I was mad that I was mad, and that was the day I threw my scale away, because I realized I was where my body wanted to be. I was maintaining within that range, wearing the clothes that I felt great in. You have talked about that you have lost inches. You know, when you started lifting weights, you gained 2 pounds, but your inches are down. This is just a great example of the fact that your body composition is better than it was. Your weight's up, but your inches are down. That means fat loss and muscle gain. So I think it's time for you to break up with the idea of needing to see a smaller number on the scale. Now, if you clearly, you know, look at yourself and see that you have excess fat that you could tell is a problem, you know, that's another issue. But, you know, I've said this before, maybe not on this podcast, I'm not sure, but I know I've said it on intermittent fasting stories. Women are meant to be curvy and squishy. You know, I'm at what I consider to be my ideal maintenance range weight. And I've got squishy parts on me. And I think that's how we're supposed to be. And we can get so caught up in feeling like we have to be another way. You know, you wanna be in a weight range that you can comfortably maintain without having to do things that don't feel right to you. So I just want you to think about that. You know, maybe you're exactly where you need to be.
I love that. I feel like you threw away your scale when we had this show, right?
We did. Yeah. It was, yeah, it was June of 2017. And we started the podcast in April of 2017. And, you know, I haven't weighed myself since then, except till I got my Shape of Scale that I love so much. And, you know, I went gray on the Shape of Scale right before Thanksgiving because I'd been to the beach a couple times. I'd eaten a lot more and I could feel it. Gray meant, you know, slowly gaining a little weight. And then I didn't do anything drastic or freak out. I just stayed on my normal routine. And then I saw blue, which is losing weight. So I gained a little weight. Then I lost that weight. Then Thanksgiving hit and I went to the green and I've been on the green ever since. And that's maintaining. And so I don't need to worry about the number. Sometimes I'm curious what the number is, but I don't want to play those games with myself of like, man, if only I could just see 125, because that number is meaningless.
Do you know what does the vacation mode do on the Shape of Scale?
Okay, the vacation mode, yeah, I do know what that is because you put it on vacation mode when you're not going to be home or if you don't want to weigh. And it like doesn't count it against you with like your weighing streak. And it really, it's nothing. No, it's no big deal. It's just that Shape will fuss at you for not weighing. And because you get off of your weighing streak, it wants you to weigh daily because that's really the whole premise of it is that it keeps track of your overall trend. So it needs the data. So when I went to the beach and didn't have my scale, because I'm not going to take my scale on vacation. I'm just not going to do that. And so I put it on vacation mode. So then when I came back and got right back on it, I was off of vacation mode.
Okay. So it's not making any changes to how it interprets your...
No.
Okay. Because I was like, I don't understand, you know, how that would work, but that makes sense. I love what you said. I feel like people who, which is a lot of us, get fixated on numbers, you can kind of tell because the weight that you fixate on will be a very specific number, like 121.
She said she's always weighed between 116 and 120 since the age of 14. But she's still right there. She's still right there. She's like, oh no, I'm 121. That's fabulous. Especially if you started weightlifting.
Yeah, my question is, because she really wants to lose 5 more pounds, like, does that 5 pounds look any different on your body? You know, like, why?
That was why I mentioned the part about, you know, do you see 5 extra pounds of fat on your body? Or is it just you want to see that number on the scale? Because I can't imagine... If she's been 116 to 120 since the age of 14, I can't imagine that she sees 5 extra pounds of fat at 121.
I love everything that you said about the ADF. I was wondering, because when people write into us about ADF, it is hard to know which version they're doing. Because when I hear people doing ADF, I actually automatically assume they're doing the 500 calorie version. But do you assume they're doing
the full fast? Yeah.
Yeah. I can't sleep. Fasted. Like, I just can't. And I actually have a question for you, Jen, from me about ADF, because I've thought about this before about how, like, if I could do ADF and like actually do it, like, what would that look like? The only way I think I could do it and sleep would be if I did a 500 calorie meal, like you talked about, and took a Benadryl.
Well, see, for me, Benadryl keeps me awake because I'm the opposite. I have that ADHD brain, and Benadryl makes me wired.
Yeah, which is, of course, because we are the complete opposite in everything.
So I would be like awake for the rest of my life if I like all those Tylenol PMs and Benadryl, because that's the same, you know, same ingredient. But no, I cannot sleep on Benadryl. I mean, I wouldn't do it. If something is making you not be able to sleep and you're having to take something like that, I wouldn't do it.
This is just something that I've thought about. Like, because I am not really a fan of, I guess Benadryl is technically a pharmaceutical. I'm a fan of not doing things like that if you can at all help it. But I have thought before, I'm like, the cost benefits of doing ADF with Benadryl. This is just something I've pondered.
I don't think you would like ADF because you wouldn't want like the up day. I feel like you wouldn't like the up day. You have to eat at least 2 meals, possibly 3. I don't think you'd want to do that.
No.
Yeah, ADF is not for you, Melanie. It's not for me right now either. And like I said, I'm not ever going to say never. Like, I won't say I will never do something again. But I feel like I won't do ADF again. And I'm not anti-ADF. And I don't think it's bad. Some people love it. They love it. It's what works best for their body. Some people are scared of it. And I almost hate to say that I don't want to do it because then people are like, well, Jen doesn't like it. I'm not going to like it. I don't want to do it. And then they dread it. But then they start doing it and they love it. So I don't want people to use my feelings about it. I'm not anti it. And I know people who love it. A lot of my moderators do it and love it.
I wish I was one of those people, but I'm not.
Why? Why do you want to do it? Just to have a longer fast?
Yeah, mostly. If it works well for you, it seems like a really great lifestyle practice for those it works well for. So that's why. It's kind of like for those people who do really thrive on like a vegan diet, it's like, I wish I was that person, but I'm just not. Interestingly, really quick tangent, my sister was there with us last night and she is vegan. And she said she had this huge realization that bread made her feel really awful. She was thinking it was the folic acid added, but I was like, but it's, I don't know. I think it's probably the gluten. But I asked her, she said she had this huge epiphany pretty recently about just how much food makes her feel. I was like, what, you know, so what do you eat? And she was telling me the foods that she eats in her vegan paradigm. And they were actually, so if I were to do like paleo vegan, they were all that. It was like non-gluten containing grains, like rice, quinoa. It wasn't legumes. It was lentils, vegetables, fruits. I was like, this is very, very paleo. And I was just really exciting and interesting because it was interesting because she's like not really looked into paleo or doesn't really know any of the, well, I don't know if she knows, but she doesn't hardcore like focus on why certain foods may be inflammatory for certain people, but to see her naturally gravitate to the foods in a vegan paradigm that I would consider to be the least inflammatory or least problematic was, it was pretty cool.
Well, she's listening to her body and it makes sense, you know, that the foods that worked for your body as far as like, you know, you gravitated to paleo foods and she has too.
Because what I was telling her was I wrote my book, What When Wine. Well, it released in stores in 2018, but I wrote the first version in 2014. And despite everything that's happening, like, I don't know, there's been so much research, so many findings since then. Really, like the food, actually really all of it, I still pretty much feel the same with everything that I've seen since then about the potential inflammatory nature of like the categories of foods. And then the same with the fasting. It's nice to see that rather than being like, oh, I thought this was like absolutely amazing and maybe it's not, or yeah.
Hey friends, did you know there is an ancient botanical that modern research shows performs on a level comparable to metformin when it comes to supporting healthy blood sugar levels? And not only that, this compound also supports the gut microbiome, healthy cholesterol levels, and even stimulates the AMPK pathway in the body to support cellular cleanup and longevity. You might have heard about AMPK. We talk about it a lot in the context of fasting, which also stimulates it. I am talking about berberine. I take berberine every single day of my life, and I see massive differences on my CGM, my continuous glucose monitor, when I use it. I take it to support my fast and before meals to reduce blood sugar levels. It is a powerhouse of a compound. And like I said, people are prescribed the pharmaceutical metformin to control their blood sugar levels when they could be taking this completely natural compound that has been used for thousands of years in both ancient traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine. I wanted to make the best berberine on the market, so that's why I created Avalon X Berberine 500. We did so much testing to find the most potent, pure, and clean form available. There's no problematic fillers, no common allergens, just pure, vegan, lab-tested berberine extracted from traditional sources. Friends, I am not kidding the difference I see on my blood sugar levels with this berberine. We're talking no post-meal spikes when I eat all that fruit and lower fasting blood sugar levels. It also reduced my HbA1c and my cholesterol levels. You can get it at avalonx.us. And the coupon code IFPODCAST will get you 10% off. You can also get a one-time 20% off coupon code when you text AvalonX to 877-861-8318. That's AvalonX to 877-861-8318. And you can get a 15% off coupon code by signing up for email updates. For that, just go to avalonx.us/email list. Again, friends, this is one of the most powerful compounds you can add into your health and wellness routine. Healthy blood sugar control, even if you're not pre-diabetic or diabetic, is so important, and berberine helps support that. It is the ultimate compound for blood sugar control, cholesterol, your gut microbiome, and longevity. Get it at avalonx.us with the coupon code IFPODCAST.
Well, good. I'm glad that she's figuring it out. Well, our next question is from Allison, and the subject is sugar cravings once I open my window. Hi, Jen and Melanie. I love your podcast and have been IF for about 3 weeks. I did IF about a year ago, but slowly went back to my old habits. During my first try of IF, I did a 16-8 window. I now have a 5 to 6 hour eating window. I've noticed that I don't have cravings during the fasted state, but once I start eating, all I want is sugar. I usually open my window with something healthy like avocado and tomato. But once I'm satiated from a hunger standpoint, a major sugar craving kicks in. Have you heard of this, and do you have any suggestions?
All right. So, Allison, thank you for your question. So I feel like there are probably three potential things that could be going on here. One is, especially since you talked about you did IF, but then you went back to old habits, it could literally be a habitual thing that you associate eating with sugar, with those types of foods. So it could just be at like the habit brain kicking in. Also similar to that, it could be, we know when we eat sugar that it releases feel-good neurotransmitters. So it could be just kind of like wanting a drug, basically. And that can seem a little bit intense, but when they do studies in rats, for example, rats prefer sugar to cocaine, which is kind of crazy. So it could be that. It could be a comforting thing, like eating sugar makes us feel, it sends our bodies like a safety signal because of the calorie nature of it. The third thing that it could be, which is actually very different, is if she was opening her window with protein and then craving sugar, a case for that is often because we can get sort of like a reactive hypoglycemia from protein, and the sugar helps balance that out. But she's opening it with avocado and tomato and feels satiated and then has the sugar craving. So I don't think it's that case. I mean, it really sounds habitual. One of the things that I have heard is that the way you can identify if it's a craving is if it is for a very specific food and you just want that one food. Because like when you're hungry and it's not a craving, you can like think of like a lot of probably like whole foods that would taste really delicious. But if it's like, oh, I really want Skittles, or I really want cereal, or I really want this one specific thing, then it's quite often a craving. So as for the advice, well, first of all, Jim, what are your thoughts about the source of this?
Well, first of all, one thing I think that is important is that she's only been doing IF for 3 weeks. So we do see people who are still in the adjustment phase have like a tendency to have that drive to eat more during their eating window when they're first starting as their bodies are adjusting. And it has to do, you know, you're not well fueled yet in the fasted state because your body's still becoming fat adapted. And so you open your window and then bam, you know, now you're craving that energy that your body's not quite getting yet. And people find that calms down after they become fat adapted and adjusted to fasting. So I don't know if that's what, you know, part of what's happening for you, but it could be because the timing is right. But also, I mean, you know, I still get sugar cravings every day. Sometimes, well, I mean, not every day, but I do like to have something sweet, but I don't think of it as a negative. I think of it as, why does every human crave something sweet? And why have we decided that that's bad and wrong if we all do it? So what I do, and I, you know, I've discovered, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know that too much sugar gives me restless legs. So I'm mindful of what I choose and what I eat. But I do not beat myself up for wanting something sweet. Maybe I have a couple of medjool dates. That satisfies that craving for something sweet, closes my window beautifully. I've been having smoothies to close my window. Now, these are smoothies made with whole foods, really high quality foods. I talked about them before. I'm loving Daily Harvest smoothies. If you go to the favorite things tab of jenstevens.com, I have a link there, but they're really high quality ingredients. You know, it satisfies my need to have something sweet. They don't have any added sugar. They're sweetened with things like a banana or dates. And they also have things in there to balance it out, like chickpeas, which might sound weird, but it's delicious. So it balances it out with some protein and it's after my meal. You know, yesterday I actually had some vanilla ice cream because we had some still in the freezer from the holidays. And I just had a little bit and it wasn't a problem. So I want you to think about this. If you're like binging on low quality sugar things like, you know, packs of cookies, then, you know, obviously that would not be a good long-term strategy. But if you were like, you know, I love cookies and I have cookies and I'm craving a cookie and I'm going to have one, or choose something, you know, if you don't think cookies serve your body well, then think of something that would and have that. You know, Melanie loves pineapple. That would meet her sweet craving. Don't feel guilt from it just because maybe you think that we're not supposed to have anything that tastes sweet. I don't agree with that idea.
Oh, it's so interesting with fruit. Like some people that works really well. Like for me, it works really well, but some people that makes them more hungry. So knowing like what type of sweet, so between the more simple sugars found in fruit compared to the more complex sugars found in something like, well, if you made like a, I'm paleofying it, but if you made like a cookie out of, you know, like starches, although that would have sugar in it. So I guess that would be all of them. One thing you could try is opening, because she says, okay, she opens with avocado and tomato. So I know I said that some people eat protein and then they crave the sweet because they need it to help process the protein without having a reactive hypoglycemia response. One thing you could do is open with the avocado and tomato and protein. So like opening with protein, because protein is extremely satiating and you might find that opening with that and a fat, which would be avocado, you might have less of the craving. But yes, I like what you said about that.
We have so much guilt around the whole idea, you know, of wanting to eat something sweet. I mean, okay, I do think that, like you mentioned before, we know about the rats and that, you know, I'm talking about just, you know, refined sugar, you know, they'll just go to it more than just cocaine. So, and some people do have, the areas of their brain that light up and they consider themselves to be, you know, sugar addicts and they need to not have sugar. And I'm talking about sugar itself. But then some people have taken it to the point where they're like, well, anything like fruit, anything sweet is bad and no one should ever have any of that. And I mean, I'm not going to say that there aren't people that need to avoid that. And I understand if someone says to me, I can't eat fruit is bad for my body, you know, I believe you. But I don't think we need to be caught up in the paradigm that craving something sweet means I'm bad and weak.
The only context I would add, and it's 100%, like it's not a moral thing. It's not bad and weak. The only caution I would add is if you are following a super high fat, super low carb diet, and you have a craving for something sweet, this is just something I've thought for a really long time, but I think it's best if you've just had like a really high fat meal and you're craving something sweet, I don't think it's the best to combine super high fat with sugar in that situation. So I like to personally, I would like ride it out with something like stevia or something like that, and then bring in carbs in the more of the context of not a ketogenic diet. That's just something I felt for a long time.
That's someone who is purposefully being ketogenic.
Yeah, because I think what happens a lot is, and I've said this before on the show, but I feel like a lot of times people will do ketogenic diets and it's not satiating and it's not really working for them that well. And they're eating like a super, super high fat version. And then they get like sugar cravings and then they're like, oh, whatever, I'll just eat all the sugar. In that context, I think that can create a very unhealthy or a potentially damaging metabolic state, like in that acute moment. So I've always thought that it's kind of like coming off the keto diet if you want to bring back carbs. I think doing some fasting, so like addressing the craving with something sweet that's not actually sugar, and then like doing your fast, and then the next day approaching it with more carbs in a lower fat context.
Yeah, and I think it's distinguishing between sugar craving and the craving for something sweet. Because for me, it's the craving to have a little something sweet. Like back in the day when I was trying keto, I made like keto cheesecake. And that satisfied the craving for something sweet.
Yeah, yeah. Which I'm assuming you probably made it with
whatever all that stuff was. I don't know. All the artificial stuff that you were using back in the day with that. So anyway, but I still, you know, I always had that little taste for something sweet that I needed. But I don't think of it as a negative or a weakness.
Yeah, and that's why I personally, like I was doing low carb for a long time. And I think I did for a while see it as like a weakness or something like you just said. But then I realized I was much happier doing intermittent fasting and then having all the sweet that I wanted in the form of fruit and, you know, satiating that at night in my eating window. And that worked really well for me. And this was, I switched to a lower fat context for it.
Yeah, the smoothies, we're really enjoying them, Chad, and I'll split one, which is so funny because for a while he was like, let's just have fourth of one and save it. And I'm like, we're not doing that. Because he's one of those naturally thin people that has appetite correction. He's like, I only want a little bit. I'm like, well, then just throw it away. I'm making a new one tomorrow. We're not going to have a quarter of a smoothie every day. It is so funny. I mean, he's the person that'll leave like two green beans on his plate.
Yeah, I can't do that.
Just eat the green beans. Eat the green beans.
Especially like when I go to restaurants, like it's completely cleared. I always look around and people, you know, a lot of people do like not finish everything. And I'm like,
I do stop eating. Sometimes I'll be like, you know, I've had enough of this chicken. Do you want the rest of this piece of chicken? And I'll hand that to him. He might eat it or I just won't finish it. But, you know, two green beans or a quarter of a smoothie. No.
I've always finished everything like my entire life.
Really? I don't always, but I tend to if it's something I'm really enjoying.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's funny.
Shall we go to the next question?
Yes.
All right. So this comes from Nelson. I don't have the subject, but Nelson says, hey, ladies, I love your show. To make a long story short, I discovered IF. This was a really old question, but I came across it and I just was like, oh, I have to read this. This is crazy. He says, I discovered IF by a group of extras at a shoot for Manhunt for Netflix, where Melanie's name was mentioned early spring 2019. This just cracks me up because I used to do that all the time, like doing extra on shows for like TV and Netflix and stuff like that. So it's funny to me that people were talking about me in that situation.
That is funny. Yeah.
Oh, it's so funny. Like I could have been on that set. Well, 2019, I could have been. He says, I lost over 100 pounds now. It's not only the lifestyle I love. What I love is that I made it fit me. Do you know what I mean? Nothing drastic, just delay, don't deny. So simple. Now for my question. I'll reach maintenance at 180. I'm 224 today. I was 330. My wife thinks I'm too skinny. My mom too. Everybody around me is over 275 pounds, and now they're all wondering what I am doing. I gave them your books, but my wife wants me heavier. What do I do? By the way, I am a 56-year-old father of 8 boys, married for 26 years. Happy fasting. Thank you for all that you do.
This is a great question, Nelson. Thank you for sharing it. And I'm going to share a personal story from my life when I first was approaching my goal in 2015. So keep in mind that I had been 210 pounds most recently, and I had been, you know, up in that 180 to 200 range, up and down, around in there for a few years prior to hitting 210 and realizing that I was obese. So my husband had been used to seeing me heavy. So then when I was getting close to my goal weight, my initial goal was 135 pounds because that was 75 pounds down. It seemed like a number that like if I ever could just hit that 75 pounds down, 135 seemed like perfection. Then I got there and I'm like, all right, I'm at my goal. But then I realized I did still have some fat to lose, which is true. I did. And I did go on to lose at least, you know, 5 more pounds around in there to hit around 80 gone. But the point I'm making is when I hit that 135, my husband said, you're too skinny. And he had seen me way less than that at, you know, early in our marriage when I was younger. And he never said I was too skinny then. But after seeing me at 210 and then around the 180s for a while, suddenly it was a big change to see me at 135. So he was like, yeah, you don't lose any more weight. Do not lose any more weight. And, you know, I ignored him, did whatever I wanted to do. And he doesn't think I'm too skinny, even though I am 2 sizes down from where I was at that day, you know, that I hit my goal. And when he said, don't lose any more weight, I'm 2 sizes down from that day. And he does not think I'm too skinny now. So people have to adjust to the new you. And so choose a weight where you can healthily maintain and feel good in your skin. Don't fixate on the number. You know, maybe it's 180. You know, you're 224 today. Maybe it's 190. Maybe it's 175. You don't know. Just let your body decide, you know, what feels right to you and what's easy for you to maintain. And when you get there, your family will adjust to your new size. Our bodies do not want to be too skinny. So it's really unusual that anyone would lose below a weight that is healthy for your body. So I wouldn't stress out about that. Let them adjust and they'll see. What do you think about that, Melanie?
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think maybe when it comes up, something that you can focus on rather than debating the weight is shift the focus to talking about how you feel, like health-wise, like how you're feeling better, and, you know, have that discussion rather than trying to be defensive about the weight or the size.
Right. We hear this a lot, you know, that people say, well, now everyone around me tells me I've lost too much weight and I'm getting too skinny. And whenever anybody asks that, I say, all right, what's your height? What's your weight? And they're always in a healthy BMI range when they're saying this. I've never once had anybody say a weight that puts them below a healthy BMI range. It's just that I really think it takes time for people to adjust to the new you.
Hey, friends, guess what? Have you ever wanted a dating app that takes into account your dietary preferences? Things like fasting, whether or not you're paleo, keto, vegan, omnivore, junk food lover, whatever it may be. Or maybe it's important to you that you date a fellow wine drinker or a coffee lover, or you're sober curious and don't want drinks to be the first date. Speaking of first dates, did you know that the top four first dates all involve food or drink? That's right. Food and drink are super important for compatibility. That's why I'm making a dating app to address this. It's basically like any other mainstream dating app, except you can filter by dietary preference. For all of the launch information, including how to get it and launch specials, get on the email list. For that, go to cravingdating.com. Again, that's cravingdating.com. Through that list, we'll be sending updates, information about the launch, and even let you guys weigh in on the development. So again, go now to cravingdating.com.
So this is from Rebecca, and the subject is blood work / glucose. I have been clean fasting since March 1st of 2020, and am amazed how fit I feel and how loose my clothes are. I thought I was doing well prior until I realized by putting stevia in my coffee, eating sugar-free breath mints, I was compromising my fast. I know now. Here is my question. I was watching my A1C levels climb since the majority of my dad's side of the family all have diabetes, all of them. I was watching my level climb, and a year ago, my A1C reached 5.7, which is pre-diabetic. Since I got on track, it is now 5.5 for 5 months, which I thought would even drop more when I started the clean fast in March. Shouldn't that have dropped more? And also, my glucose level went from 89 in January 2020 to 100, and I fasted 15 hours. Any suggestions as to why that went up? Thank you so much. Sincerely, Rebecca. And she said, by the way, I have your book, Jen, and also pre-ordered your new book coming out this month. I also bought the obesity code. So that lets me know she sent this in June. So at the time that she wrote this, she was only 3 months into intermittent fasting. That's important.
Awesome. So thank you so much, Rebecca. So for listeners who are not familiar, HbA1c is, so we have our blood sugar that we can monitor, which is in your blood. And then we have our HbA1c, which shows longer-term effects of elevated blood sugar levels on our red blood cells. The turnover rate is 3 months. So we tend to see changes in HbA1c on like a 3-month timeline. So I'm so excited because I finally released my first episode. Had I released it last time we recorded, Jen, with NutriSense?
I'm not sure if it had been released yet.
So I'm really excited because I actually just released 2 days ago, finally, the episode, because, you know, Jen and I have been talking about CGMs so much on this show recently, which are continuous glucose monitors, which give you a real-time picture of your blood sugar levels throughout the day. And I interviewed NutriSense. There's two different companies that I was trialing. There's NutriSense and Levels. I'm interviewing both of them and bringing them both and releasing episodes with both of them. But I did release just now the episode with NutriSense, which is making CGMs accessible to the general public. And the reason I'm talking about this is we dived so deep, Rebecca. If you listen to that episode, I think it will help you so much. We went really deep into HbA1c, blood sugar levels, higher fasting blood sugar levels while fasting. Like she says that she's fasting 15 hours and now her blood sugar was up from 89 to 100. I will say one of the biggest things I've learned from wearing a CGM, because I've been wearing one for about a month and a half now, is just how, for a lot of people and for me, how much your blood sugar can change throughout the day. So like you could measure one moment and it might be 89, and then you might wait 5 minutes and measure it and it might be 100. It can really change that much.
It really does.
Yeah, based on a lot of factors. So interesting thing about HbA1c is that's why it is sort of a better marker, because you are seeing the longer term effect. That said, in the interview that the founder of NutriSense, her name is Kara Collier, she was actually talking about some of the potential issues with HbA1c, and there is some debate about factors affecting it and how reliable it is. But all of that said, it is possible. And this is something that I asked Kara, because a lot of people doing fasting or low carb diets actually find that they start having higher fasted blood sugar levels. So usually around like 100, kind of what Rebecca is experiencing. And the question I asked Kara this, I also asked at Levels, her name was Casey. I asked her as well. I am very curious about people who are doing fasting, and we don't know if this is the case with Rebecca, but a lot of people who are doing fasting, doing low carb, and experiencing a slightly elevated fasted blood sugar. The flip side is they don't tend to be getting the huge spikes. So like when they're eating, they're not getting these crazy high blood sugar levels, but the fasted blood sugar may be at a higher baseline. And I am personally really curious, and I don't know that we have the answer to this yet, about, you know, the cost benefit of all this and how it is affecting things like HbA1c and things like that. The point of all this is, Rebecca, if this does continue to be a thing, especially since you really want to take charge of this, I would really, really recommend getting a CGM if that is a possibility for you. You can go to melanieavalon.com/NutriSense CGM, and the coupon code Melanie Avalon will get you 15% off. And they do have a 2-week one. I don't think the code works for that, but they have a 2-week one, and they have like 3 months and 6 months in different plans. But anybody who is trying to figure out their blood sugar levels, their HbA1c, their fasting, the foods they're eating, how it's affecting them, that the CGM might really, really help. So her question is, any suggestions as to why it went up? It could be the fasting. It could be just when you tested it, like when you took that blood sugar draw. It could be that maybe if you had tested it at a slightly different time, that it would have been in the 80s as well.
That was mind-blowing to me from wearing the CGM. And so then I was like, well, this is now a meaningless question, because it just really could have been 5 minutes earlier. You could have had, you know, or 30 minutes earlier. It could have been completely different.
It's really shocking, actually.
It really surprised me a lot how much it varied from minute to minute, even in the fasted state. Like, you assume that when you're fasted, it's just steady there. But no, your body is constantly keeping it within this range. And, you know, your liver dumps some more glycogen, and it just keeps going up and down within this range.
Yeah, and that's something that's really good about doing like NutriSense, is you have an app with it and you can see, like, has like tables and charts. So even if it's changing, you can see like where the general line is, and then it gives you scores. It does all the analyzing for you. So, and kind of makes sense of the data to let you know if things are potentially a problem or not. The other thing really cool about NutriSense is they actually, and you can opt out if you don't want this, but they actually talk to you via email or via chat, I think, in the app, and give you advice and guidance and can interpret your results for you, which I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. It's very, very tailored to helping figure things out. So if you like really want to figure it out, that could definitely be something that could help you. Like, I found for me that I wasn't like super happy with my fasted blood sugar levels, and I started supplementing with berberine. That had a profound effect on my fasting blood sugar. So I'll put a link in the show notes to the berberine that I'm taking. It's the Thorn brand. But yeah.
And I also want to put out there, we don't know, this is really important. The A1C is a measure of your past 2 to 3 months of blood sugar. It's like, gives you that like kind of average. All right. So it had been 5.7. It got to 5.5. And she said she thought it would drop even more when she started the clean fast in March. So I don't know when her A1C was tested. Like, she's only been doing clean fasting for 3 months. So I imagine that her A1C was tested at some point within that 3 months of the clean fast. So that's really not much time. It takes people a lot longer to see positive changes in their A1C than just, you know, at first, because our bodies are, you know, we have the adjustment period for intermittent fasting. Our bodies are doing a lot of changing, a lot of healing. So it's not like it happens overnight. Like, now I'm fasting, everything's fixed. No, it might take a year for you to see, you know, see the trend over time. Maybe get it tested every 3 months, and hopefully every 3 months you'll see that trend getting better. But not at first. I mean, and she's still really right there in the beginning.
She doesn't mention at all what she's eating. So if what you're eating, you're massively spiking your blood sugar, and depending on how long it's taking for that blood sugar to come down, that could be a huge factor. I don't think people can always fast themselves out of foods that aren't working for us. So hopefully that was helpful. So a few things for listeners before we go. If you'd like to submit your own questions for the podcast, you can directly email questions at ifpodcast.com, or you can go to ifpodcast.com and you can submit questions there. The show notes for today's episode will be at ifpodcast.com/episode194. Oh, listeners, for episode 200, we are going to do an Ask Me Anything episode. So if you have any questions, you can ask Jen and I anything about like our personal lives or anything, our opinions on whatever. So just send us those questions and put AMA in the title so we know that that's what it's for. You can get all of the stuff we like at ifpodcast.com/stuff we like. You can get, oh, I wanted to mention, because I was talking about dry farm wines in the beginning, you can get a bottle for a penny for Dry Farm Wines at dryfarmwines.com/IFPodcast.
Ooh, can I tell you what I got Chad for Christmas?
Dry Farm Wines?
I did.
You did? Oh.
Yeah, I've ordered him some dry, you know, I'm not drinking wine right now, but he's drinking wine. And we've like, he has slowly gone through my Dry Farm Wines because that's all he wants to drink now. And so I was like, I'm going to get him some Dry Farm Wines.
I'm doing that for my dad too.
I love it.
Does he drink red?
Chad likes red. Yeah. He prefers red. I got him a box. Yeah. And you can get a gift box. I don't know if people know you can do that. You can send someone a gift box.
Yeah. You can do like a one-off.
Yep. You don't have to send a subscription.
I've been gifting myself because I've been going faster than my subscription.
When I was doing that, I was going faster than my subscription. I would just go in and change the next ship date.
Yeah, I've done that and I've done the gift box.
But anyway, so I've got to try to figure out how to like intercept the box before he sees it because he's home, you know, for the semester. He's grading final exams. So I'm just like going to be standing at the curb waiting for UPS to deliver it.
Don't look. Don't look while I grab sign for this heavy box.
When I see that it's out for delivery, I'll be like, please go do a lot of shopping for me at the grocery store. Anyway, I just had to throw that in about Dry Farm Wines because we love it.
Love them. Love them. So if you'd like to get a bottle for a penny, you can go to dryfarmwines.com/IFPodcast. And you can follow us on Instagram, the place to be with Jen and I. I'm starting to have the time of my life there. I'm Melanie Avalon, Jen is Jen Stevens. I did actually, no, friends, for reals, follow me. I'm doing a lot of giveaways. So like for the CGM episode, I'm giving away a CGM.
Ooh, can I enter to win?
Sure. If you win, I'll be like, nope.
Oh, that's okay. Never mind.
No, you can enter. Enter, enter. And then when I do the drawing,
I cannot win. That's fine. Okay.
I will die if it lands on you. That would be so funny.
That would be funny.
No, every episode that I release now, if they have something that is like giveawayable, I'm asking them if they'll give it away.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. So it's been CGM. So that giveaway will probably be over, but there might be another one going on when this comes out in January. Happy 2021, Jen.
Awesome. Yeah.
Happy January 4th to you.
We're recording this way in the past, but I think we're all ready for some 2021.
I think so. So, oh, and Jen is Jen Stevens on Instagram. And I think that is everything.
I think so too.
All right. Well, anything else from you before we go?
Still no.
I will talk to you next week.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. Please remember that everything discussed on the show is not medical advice. We're not doctors. You can also check out our other podcasts, Intermittent Fasting Stories and the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. Theme music was composed by Leland Cox. See you next week.